It is 4:05 on a Friday. So we're going to leave this really sweet, sweet sound of, who is this?
If it's Richard Krauss coming up, which it is, there can only be one soundtrack.
It's Bowie.
It's David Bowie.
Well, he's getting robed up, so we got to leave Bowie behind and enter Entertainment Court.
Order in the Entertainment Court. Let's get judgy.
Court is now in session.
Judgy, indeed, our resident entertainment guru, Richard Krauss, is here. The David Bowie music brought him in. And Richard Krauss, Judge Krauss, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry,
yes,
Your Honor.
Yes, yes, yes. We'll discuss that later. Your insolence.
Tell us the first case that is on your docket today.
Okay, well, Taylor Swift fans and despondent singles will be able to visit a Swift-themed breakup bar this Valentine's Day in Chicago. It's a time-limited pop-up venue called Bad Blood in homage to Swift's song from her 2014 album, 1989. It is just going to be there for a very short while, and you can go and just, you know, sing karaoke, mostly Taylor Swift songs. You'll get for $20 admission, you get one beverage, and then you get to mix and mingle with the other folks there. So my question for you is, how does spending Valentine's Day with the brokenhearted sound to you?
I would rather spend Valentine's Day with the brokenhearted than those people in love.
I'll pass, thanks.
So Valentine's Day originated as a Christian feast day honoring one or two early Christian martyrs named St. Valentine's. These days, and really since the 14th and 15th century, the day has been a celebration of romantic love, chocolate-shaped hearts, and bouquets of very expensive flowers. For those who celebrate, it can get really pricey, and the celebration of it often comes with impossibly high expectations. As someone who has celebrated the day many times, I'm glad that single people, the folks who often feel left out, will finally have a chance to spend their hard-earned money on a useless holiday designed to vacuum the cash out of their wallets. Now they can spend a fortune, have trouble getting a reservation at Bad Blood, and spend time with all the other desperate people determined to have a good time, no matter what the cost. And that is my verdict.
It's fairness. It's equity. That's what it is.
That's what I'm all about.
All right, Judge Krauss, hit us with the next one.
Okay, so Nick Cave was sent a song by one of his fans that was produced by a viral chatbot software called ChatGPT, and it was written in the, quote, style of Nick Cave. And then in response to that, Nick Cave said, listen, there's one line in it that I kind of like, but the rest of it is nonsense. I'm not happy about this. Please refrain from sending me any more of these. ChatGPT has been causing alarm amongst educational institutions for its ability to circumvent plagiarism detection tools. And so there's all sorts of this AI out there. You feed it a couple of questions and it spits out an essay or to write lyrics to a song for you. So my question is to you, do you want to listen to songs or really any art created by artificially intelligent machines?
No, no, 1,000 times no.
Bob Reed is a musician. He is about to play tomorrow night in a real band, in a real place, and make real magic, which is music. So how dare I say I would want to listen to anything artificially intelligently produced? No, I would not. This is terrible. And I love Nick Cave.
As do I. And here's what I have to say about that. Great art comes from lives lived, emotions, and individual technique, all human traits that machines and computer programs don't have and never will have. At its best, ChatGPT is simply a plagiarism tool that retools already existing work, the creative juices of real people in a different, always less interesting way. Machines don't struggle. They don't have good days or bad, and they certainly have never had those aha moments where a new idea forms and leads to artistic discovery. At best, they are mirrors that reflect already existing art, not doorways to walk through on the path to discovery. Until the machines get sentient and are ruled by emotions and not algorithms, no machine, no matter how artificially intelligent, will ever create something as beautiful or original as Angels in America, as earwormy as Bohemian Rhapsody, or hold a looking glass to our lives like the Flintstones did. As Spoon's keyboardist Rob Pruse said on Twitter the other day, we have enough people making crappy music, art, and poetry. We don't need robots to do that as well. Have a nice day. And that is my verdict.
All right. What is our next case, Judge Krause?
Marie Osmond has 7 kids, and she wants them to make their own fortunes. And that was according to a report that was released recently. The country singer believes that individuals who are simply handed money often end up lacking drive and ambition, and she wants her children to discover their own interests on the road to forging meaningful careers and lives. As a result, she told Us Weekly that she doesn't plan to leave her kids anything, no inheritance at all. So the question that I have for you is Marie Osmond right to play hide the wallet with her children's inheritances?
No. What are you talking about? Don't we provide for our children? My son gets everything I have. I want to accrue more for him. What is wrong with this woman? No, I'm totally against this. It's too cruel.
You can provide some for your children, not necessarily everything. That would be my take.
Nobody likes a trustafarian, someone who lives off money they didn't earn. It would be nice to be left cash by your parents, a little bit anyway, but I agree with Warren Buffett, who has long pledged to donate more than 99% of his wealth to charitable causes. And I agree with him when he said, leave the children enough so that they can do anything, but not enough so that they can do nothing. Sting, who's worth about $300 million, says he won't leave his kids trust funds that are albatrosses around their necks. And Kirk Douglas donated most of his $61 million fortune to charity and not to his kids. Experts estimate that 33% of benefactors have negative savings within 2 years of inheriting wealth. So when it comes to inherited wealth, it's easy come, it's easy go. So it seems that Marie Osmond is a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll, and a little bit Warren Buffett. And that is my verdict.
Well, I mean, it's easy come, easy go because they're watching their wealthy celebrity parents burn their money and blow it all on whatever they're blowing it on. But how do you grow up watching your mother with all of these luxuries? I mean, I don't know, just the absence of financial stress, you know, just being able to eat whatever you want, whenever you want to, or wear whatever you want, whenever you want to. You grow up around that and then you have to struggle.
Well, it's something about building character, I think, is really what they're saying. And that's a sound you don't hear on the radio very often. It's about, I think, building character and figuring out, you know, your own path forward, just like the parents did. So Sting was a teacher beforehand. He's worth $300 million now. But he said he and his wife, Trudy, said, like, there's not going to be a lot left because we're spending this money. Now, But they're spending it on their kids, too. I mean, they're not just, you know, drinking out of giant gold chalices and making the kids drink out of sippy cups. They are actually probably spending some of their money there. The kids are used to a certain lifestyle. But what Sting wants and what Warren Buffett wants for his kids is a little cushion to say, go out in the world and do what you can do with, you know, the success that I've had. And I'll pass a little bit of that down to you. But you can't just rely on this so you won't do anything.
Yeah.
Anderson Cooper's mother, Gloria Vanderbilt, said to him, there's nothing left for you. I've spent every dime. She was the heiress to a huge fortune. She said, there is not a dime left. And then when she died, it turns out that there was like $200 million that he inherited. But because he didn't think he was getting anything, he worked really hard. He never flies first class. He lives modestly. He just has a real life. And now he's got $200 million extra dollars in the bank to do whatever he wants with.
Yeah, and I bet he's going to leave it to his son.
Maybe so.
Guys, come on. Okay, Judge Krause, we appreciate you so much.
Thanks, Richard.
Thanks so much. See ya.
I'm showing my cards. I'm the child of immigrant parents. My dad had holes in his socks so I could go to university. I let him down a lot.
Sorry, Mr. Nair.